in our way. I swallowed. She was probably right. Take me to her. Let me rest there. It'll be better for you all if I'm out of the way. It was Elizabeth who walked me down, as Miyaka was the one making the most headway research-wise.
Listen, Colin, we're going to figure this out.
I know. I trust you. Elizabeth grimaced.
Sorry, we didn't tell you where we disappeared to. At first, we hoped we'd be able to find him and tell you how he was, make you happier. Then, when we saw how badly he was doing, we wanted to wait until he was better. And then
you saw he wasn't getting better. She nodded.
I'm sorry.
We stopped just before the water, and she held on to me. I was too tired to cry.
I know it shouldn't hurt, I said, because he never really could have been mine anyway. And I know that every life ends, and it isn't the amount of time we have that makes it valuable. It's still just heartbreaking. All I wanted was his happiness.
This makes it worse for us, because all we want is yours, and it hangs on his.
I took a deep, sobbing breath.
Life is pointless. Love is pointless. And still, wouldn't I do every second of it all over again?
I'm guessing yes. Undoubtedly, yes. Yes, every time.
She smiled at me, at our fruitless lives, and helped me down.
I've been waiting for news. Is it a disease?
The ocean demanded the second Elizabeth's feet hit the surf.
Miyaka's researching. There isn't much to say yet, she began.
That's not true, I turned to my sister. Leave us alone. Let me tell her what we know.
Everything. Elizabeth huffed.
If you want.
And she left me in the water as gently as she could while still being quick. I knew she was worried for herself, for Padma, but this wasn't time for secret keeping.
I'm catching pieces of your thoughts, but they're very scattered.
Sorry. My body gave an involuntary shiver. I'm still trying to line them all up.
Start with New York. That's what I see.
I braced myself.
I told Miyaka about Akinlee and what happened in Port Clyde. I thought I'd hidden it from the others, but apparently I said his name in my sleep. I drew a picture of him without thinking about it, and I told them the name of the town. They knew he was the source of my sadness and set out to pass along news about him.
Ah, so I've been living with more lies than I knew.
Her voice was heavy with disapproval.
Yes, but you might be glad for these lies.
How so?
Whatever I have, Akinlee has as well, I informed her. So there's at least one more case.
There was a long, heavy pause.
That's impossible.
He has the same symptoms as I do, meaning we have a place to start. If he passed it on to me, we know that it's communicable and that it's strong. We also know doctors are looking for answers. Miyaka is hunting for other cases, seeing if we can find an origin. Their lies might keep me alive.
She sighed in relief.
Your sisters care for you, although I believe they are mistaken. I will forget their disobedience.
Thank you.
My body felt heavy, like it might sink to the sand any second.
Is there anything you need?
Sleep.
Of course.
The ocean made herself into a bed, putting tension under my body so I could get comfortable. I tried to let myself rest, but even as tired as I was, sleep evaded me. For so long, I'd felt my life was out of my control. Now it was in the truest way possible. This wasn't about freedom or choices. This was about survival, and I could do nothing about it. I hated being disconnected from the search, more for Akinlee's pain than mine. Nearly a year of this. How much longer could he endure? If my body was failing, how could... I gagged on the water. Then, in trying to draw breath, I choked on more. With the little energy I had, I tried to swim to the surface. But without words, the ocean was aware of my struggle and pushed me to air.
Miyaka, Elizabeth, Padma.
I lay on top of the water, throwing up water and the small bits of food they'd been trying to get me to eat. No more of that. I was close enough to the house that I could see them running.
When they hit the ocean, she solidified for them so they could run across her back to me.
Colin, Padma cried. She's breathing.
Elizabeth's words were echoing in my ears.
Carry her back. She cannot go in my waters. She can't breathe.
Padma sucked in a breath.
Oh, no.
It's worse than I thought, Mieka whispered. I'd have told her I could still hear her, but it took too much work to speak. They lifted me effortlessly, carrying me across the edge of the Pacific, taking me into the house. I recognized the heat of the shower, the comfort of clean clothes, and the tender way Padma tucked me in. But I was so exhausted, so frightened, I couldn't even say thank you. 27. By the next day, I was able to sit up in bed. I could tell that I'd be able to walk if I needed to, but I had no desire to move from my spot. It was safe and warm, though I took little comfort in it. I was deeply aware of that string tied to Akinlee. And now, more than ever, I felt the tension between our bodies split across the country, sharing a similar ache. Maybe it was something that had been there the whole time, or maybe it had only emerged once I decided to sneak back to Port Clyde. But there were moments when I felt something akin to the pulse after touching a bruise, and I was certain it was his weakness echoing in me. Weeks passed, and events swirled around me. While I lay in bed, conserving what energy I had, the ocean was intentionally tracking news. She listened to the thoughts of every soul who swam in a lake or basked with their toes in the surf. As fishermen plunged their hands into water or lovers flirted with their feet off a dock, she was there. No one spoke of a mysterious new epidemic robbing people of their vitality, crippling bodies.
I'm looking,
she vowed, her voice coming in through the walls.
I'm searching for answers.
It was pitiable that I could not answer her, and I could hear the unimaginable worry of the ocean, agonizing that I, her eldest, was fading. And yet, I still felt that she was holding something back. There was a heaviness in her voice, as if she suspected something she didn't want to believe. I was afraid to ask her. What if what she knew was that there was no cure? Mieka forced me onto a scale for the third time in a week. That's another 2 pounds. How are you losing weight? Please don't make me try to eat again. She scooped me up, and I wondered at how waifish I must be becoming if she carried me so effortlessly. What if it was all drinkable? Plenty of patients have to resort to liquid diets. Patients? There were many words I didn't like to use to define myself. Murderer, fictional, soulless. Patient was going on that list. How do you know? I asked, leaning my head into her neck as we turned down the hall. Because I've been parked in front of a computer for the last month trying to find out what's wrong with you. She tucked me back into bed. The house was strangely quiet. I'd grown used to Elizabeth's exasperated huffs and Padma's quiet snuffles. They took their turn in searching as well, but they weren't as driven as Mieka. Where are the others? Checking on Akinlee. Padma wasn't mature enough to go out on her own, but she had happily joined Elizabeth and Mieka in monitoring his health. I felt a little lift in my pulse. Really? Yes, and with the ocean's consent. I've been hunting everywhere, checking the CDC for clues, watching chatter online, and even looking in third world countries for anything that might resemble what's happening to you two. So far, nothing. The others are going to find out how he's doing and, if possible, try to get to his medical records.
They could go to jail,
she shrugged. They could get out of jail. I let out a single laugh, my lips feeling taut from the strain.
Probably.
We need to know his diagnosis if possible. It's a long shot, but that might help us know how to treat you.
Even if how he's being treated isn't helping him? She sighed.
We're going to figure this out for both of you. Mieka brushed my hair back from my face, a tender gesture that melted my heart. I had been so glad when she came into the sisterhood. I knew now that the ocean didn't have much of a method in choosing her sirens. But when Mieka joined us, I had thought that she was a present for me. She made losing Marilyn so much easier, and her then quiet nature was perfect for me. She kept me together for so, so long.
Colin, would you please consider the liquid diet? I feel like getting some calories into you might do a world of good.
I hated not to let her try whatever she wanted to help me, but I knew my face gave away my skepticism. I'm a siren, above human, above girl. Whatever is wrong with me or Akinlee, a human need like food won't be the cure.
Mieka inhaled to chastise me, concern written across her face, when she froze.
Oh, why didn't I think of that?
Of what? Her eyes lit up with excitement, and she covered her mouth as the gears in her brain started turning.
We've been going about this backward. You're right. You're a siren. We assumed that Akinlee made you sick, so we were looking for an illness, a disease. But maybe it started with you.
With me?
Yes. What if we need to treat him for something that could hurt sirens? What if, in curing that, we cure you?
I stared at nothing, trying first to get over the guilt at possibly causing Akinlee's brokenness, then trying to fathom what this could mean.
Mieka, that's brilliant. But there's only one problem.
What?
What hurts sirens?
Her shoulders slumped.
Good point.
Mieka drummed her fingers across her chin.
I need to talk to the ocean. She must know. She's had so many of us serve her. If there's an illness that affects sirens, will you be all right by yourself for a bit?
Sure. She took off, an urgent need for answers pushing her forward. I let out a long breath, cursing myself for perhaps having any part in hurting Akinlee. Of course I valued my life. I had so many hopes for it. But when I held it up next to his, thinking of all the hurt I'd caused so many people, not just by ending their lives, but by forcing their loved ones to go on without them, I hoped if only one of us could be saved, it might be him. So far, my existence had only brought sorrow. His had the potential to bring so much joy. I closed my eyes, fixing Akinlee in the forefront of my thoughts. I'm so sorry, I said to the last image I had of him, the healthy, happy boy kissing me on the beach. And almost instantly, I felt a pulse of affection go through me, and it was as if Akinlee were near me, as if we could wrap our arms around each other. With that comfort, I drifted off to sleep again.
Undiagnosed.
Elizabeth threw the waterlogged copies of Akinlee's medical records on the table.
They tested for cancer, liver failure, thyroid disorders, the whole gamut. They even looked into depression and grief, which were definite possibilities since his parents are gone, and even more so if he misses you the way you miss him.
I sat, covered in blankets at the table, looking at the stack of papers.
How are they paying for all this? I worried aloud.
Elizabeth rolled her eyes.
Of course, that's where your head goes. Don't worry, we'll set up an anonymous donation.
I nodded. At least we could do that. Did you see him? I asked, trying not to sound too eager. Secretly, I wished they'd heard him speak of me or something, though I knew it was unlikely. Is he looking any better?
Padma stared down at the ground guiltily, as if she was ashamed. Reaching into her pocket, she pulled out a handful of pictures. I took them from her, both eager and anxious.
I recognized the blue eyes, the scruffy blonde hair that peeked from underneath the knit hat he clearly needed for warmth now. But the curves of his cheeks had turned to angles, the light in his face to a dim glow, still a light, but barely.
Oh no, I gasped, covering my mouth, hot tears coming to my eyes. Akinlee, no.
The pictures, obviously taken from the forest across from his house, showed that Ben and Julie had put in a wheelchair ramp, new and crisp, which looked all wrong against the rest of their beautifully time-worn home.
They were taking him for a walk. It's really remarkable, Colin.
I squinted up at Elizabeth, confused. What could be so fascinating about the fact that the boy I loved could no longer walk?
Even like this, everyone he saw was so thrilled to have him come by. This old woman with a mess of a front yard.
Miss Jenkins, I said with a smile.
Yeah,
she smirked, seeming unsurprised that I knew.
She put a tray of cookies in his lap.
He ate one or two, but gave the rest to the kids hanging out near the dock. We got pretty close. She pointed back to the pictures, and I flipped to the others. He was telling the kids not to let it get back to her that he'd given the cookies away. He didn't want to hurt her feelings. I shook my head. So him.
While you were gone, Miyaka began, all business. We think we had a breakthrough. I'm not surprised his records say nothing, because we're starting to think this isn't something medical. It's mythical.
Padma and Elizabeth exchanged a confused glance.
We've been trying to treat Colin for a human condition when she's not human, and it's getting us nowhere. We're starting to think he didn't pass something on to her. She passed something on to him.
Oh, Elizabeth said, both intrigued and confused. But what? How?
That's the question. I asked the ocean, but she didn't have an answer for me. She said this has never happened before. So now we're shifting focus. We're not looking for a human diagnosis. We're looking at siren history. Somewhere there must be a hint at what could simultaneously kill a human and siren while causing nothing to happen to those around them or to the ocean herself.
Padma was nodding. I will help, but I know so little next to you.
Don't worry, Miyaka began. At the moment, we all know nothing.
I was ushered back to bed while Elizabeth drove to town to fetch books from the library, and Miyaka went back to scouring the internet for leads. No one noticed that I held on to the pictures, and I set up the one with the closest shot of Akinley's face against my lamp. We'll figure this out, I promised. I won't let you sink. I stared into his tired eyes, still seeing the beauty in him. Whatever happened, I'd met my person, the one my soul connected to, despite age and distance and impossibility. I stared at the photo as if he and I were settling down for a nap, side by side, and I swore I could hear Akinley's voice saying,
Hurry.
28.
Miyaka scrutinized all the paintings of sirens she could find, spanning across human history to collect them. She blew up several, tacking them to the wall. In a notebook, she analyzed color usage, symbolism, historical context. She hunted down patrons if she could, finding out if someone had commissioned a piece or if it had been born of the artist's inspiration alone. I wasn't sure for a long time why she did this, how art could help us now.
Maybe someone actually saw one of us, she tried to explain. Maybe it was an accident or a survivor she'd missed. Maybe there's a record. I don't know. I'll take anything.
Elizabeth found references to us in a few movies and watched them repeatedly, looking to see if there were similar themes among them. For me, that seemed as pointless now as it had when I tried my hand at researching sirens myself. But Elizabeth was no scholar. She was a fighter. In the absence of someone to fight, this was the best she could do. And Padma, sweet Padma, set herself to reading every myth, every fable, every fairy tale. It was a fact that too many people ignored. Children's books held truths. During my previous research on sirens, I'd kept my studies secret. I had been reluctant to have my sisters know I was looking for an escape route. But maybe I should have said something. Seeing us now, huddled together, learning things the ocean could never teach us about ourselves, I felt closer to them than I had in a long time, and I wanted to cry, thinking I might have only truly fallen in love with my sisters on the edge of my death. And with them, I discovered much more than I had alone. We read about the Slavic Rusalski, who were the souls of women who drowned and haunted rivers and streams. The Latin Undines lacked a soul but could obtain one through marriage to a mortal. Mermaids had their long hair and beautiful tails. Naiads only lived in freshwater, and the Greeks had a slew of gods dedicated to nothing but water. Still, no matter how far we wandered down these trails, wondering if maybe one of these myths had been inspired by us, we didn't find anything that might explain my sickness. Between fits of sleep that I couldn't fight off, I read. At first, I found this all as frustrating as I had in the past. There were pieces of things we knew to be true. The numbers, the song, the inevitable death. But the rest seemed to be fiction. Things dreamed up by men to paint us as heartless women who lived to seduce them, even in the myths about other water creatures. All women, all intent on destruction. but I had a heart. I had a heart, and it was breaking. It was in the middle of all this that I picked up a collection of short stories. I recognized the title, although I'd never read it before. This book had come out about the time I'd been changed. I flipped to the piece by Franz Kafka called The Silence of the Sirens. It was barely 2 pages long, yet I couldn't stop thinking about his words, the idea that a siren's silence was more deadly than her song. I scoffed at it initially, but I couldn't shake it off. How could my silence be deadly? My silence was the only thing keeping people alive. I finished the story and moved on to other things, but that thought came back to me over and over, though I wasn't sure why. My silence hadn't killed anyone. If our not singing was so deadly, then anyone we came into contact with should be experiencing what Akinlee was. I considered every other tie I had to him, worrying I wasn't moving fast enough to help. It wasn't that we'd kissed, I knew that. Elizabeth had kissed more than her share of human men without the slightest ill effect. It wasn't that I loved him, because if love could kill, then Aisling never would have made it back to Tova, to her great-grandchild. So what was it? What was setting Akinlee apart from everyone else? Mieka, I called, my voice so hoarse I wondered if my song would even work right now. What, are you hungry? Do you feel sick? She questioned, abandoning everything for me. Can you read this for me? It's short, but something about it. I passed the thin book up to her, and she studied it briefly. Anything jump out at you? She took it from my frail hands, reading through the passage in a fraction of the time I had. How could our silence be more deadly than our song? She sneered. Exactly. She handed back the book. I'll keep thinking about it. Any luck with the art? She huffed. No, mostly it seems like we're demonized or sexualized. I noticed. And as far as I can tell, no one has knowingly seen a siren and lived to tell the tale. Someone must have, I croaked, wrapping my blanket even tighter around myself. Otherwise, how would anyone even have a place to start the myth? Well, whoever that person was, they've been dead for thousands of years and left a little more than we already know. I sighed. My head was already worn out from the day, and I could feel my heart fading right behind it. Mieka put her hands on my shoulders, and the warmth was welcome, except that it made me aware of how cold I was. We'll crack this, Colin. I feel like we're so close. I nodded, though I wasn't sure I agreed. I was worried Akinlee was running out of time, his fragile body much more breakable than mine. And I couldn't help but wonder, since our sickness was linked, what would happen to my heart if his stopped beating? Elizabeth marched over from the living room. Pointless! I'm not a man-eater, she said, flicking her head toward the television. Well, if any one of us could be, Mieka began, her tone joking. Elizabeth gave the hint of a smile, and it helped me just to feel like we could tease each other right now. I gave the biggest grin I could, which didn't amount to much, and felt a tiny sharp pain at the corner of my mouth. I touched my hand to it, hoping to dull the sting. When I pulled back my hand, the tips of my fingers were bright red. I stared at the blood, horrified. I'd been taken off guard by the nausea and fevers, and shocked by the exhaustion and aches. But this made me look my mortality square in the face. I still thought I was above bleeding. The girls exchanged nervous glances, not knowing what to say or do. Padma got a towel from the kitchen and cleaned my hand and lip for me as we all dealt with this new blow in silence. What aren't we seeing? Elizabeth asked desperately. What don't we know? We've seen every film, looked at every painting, read every book. Don't we know every story by now? Well, no, Padma said, as if what we'd skipped was obvious. I don't know hers, she pointed to me. I was changed the same as you, I began with a shrug. It was 19. No, no, Padma laughed. I mean, with this boy? What exactly happened between you? How did you even meet? In Florida. He worked at the library. We met a couple of times. The last time, we got together and made a cake. Then you lost contact? I lowered my eyes. I liked him too much. When I realized I was falling in love with him, I knew I had to leave for both our sakes.
And? I dragged the girls from Miami to Pauli's Island. We hadn't been there for very long when you came to us.
I stopped to take a breath. It was getting harder to breathe.
I thought that I was doing okay, but you saw what happened when we were singing and she took down a cruise ship with a wedding party on board. I couldn't handle it. All I ever wanted was to be that bride and to take her life on the very day she got what I longed for. It was too much. So I left her and ended up in Port Clyde, where Akinlee lived. It felt like I was pulled there by something deep inside me. I didn't expect him to be there or to find me right out of the water.
You weren't there with him long at all.
Padma leaned in, resting her head on her hand, taking in everything. I realized then that Miyaka had gotten her notebook and was writing down all this.
A day. Barely over 24 hours.
Okay, Miyaka began. Outline everything. He took you to his house? I told her again about Ben and Julie, how they had opened their home to me. I told them about Akinlee making me breakfast, and how I'd learned we each almost died with our parents.
Could that be it? Elizabeth asked. That's a strange thing to have in common.
I don't think so, but I'll make a note, Miyaka said. What next? I told them about the bookstore, the story in sign language, and the ice cream.
Did you share a spoon or anything?
Padma asked.
Would that spread some of that liquid she puts in us?
Miyaka shook her head. I'll write it down, but it's unlikely. If it were that simple, Elizabeth would have killed dozens of men by now.
Not dozens, she protested. But yes, I've shared plenty of fluids with human men, and others have done that before us. Nothing like this has come of it.
How could you be sure? I asked. It's not like any of us have had a long enough relationship to be able to tell. Elizabeth stammered.
There was one I thought was particularly charming. I went back to him once. It was several months after the first time, and he was in perfect health.
All right, documented. You know, Miyaka stated hesitantly, the ocean will want to know about all this.
Elizabeth actually growled, considering that.
All right, what else?
I talked about the brief afternoon at his house, how Julie was grateful I came, and then our date.
So how did you leave this time?
I had to pause. It was almost as painful as this consuming sickness to think about. He took me to his house. Not Ben's, but his parents' house. He knew, I don't know how he pieced it all together, but he knew there was something off about me. Instead of being afraid, he offered to protect me. He asked me to stay. And suddenly, I thought maybe I could do it. We lived among humans all the time, so how would this be any different?
I blinked, and the tears streamed onto my cheeks.
And then he kissed me. That's all. Just a perfect, timeless kiss. And in a complete moment of stupidity, I said, "Wow."
I shook my head.
His eyes went funny, and he headed for the ocean. I tried to stop him, but he just went deeper and deeper. I pleaded with her, promising to bring others in his place. It's so shameful to admit, but I think I would have if she'd asked. Anything to keep him alive.
I wiped at the tears, embarrassed at how quickly I would have turned on others if it meant he was safe.
She let him live. I wasn't supposed to tell you, but she let him live. I got him to land, kissed him, and went back to the ocean. I haven't seen him since.
Huh, Padma said. So, nothing too crazy, just a mistake. I nodded.
Wait, what was that you were saying about silence? Elizabeth asked. Weren't you talking about some quote just before I came over?
This book was saying that a siren's silence is more deadly than her song, which sounds crazy if you...
She held up a hand to silence me. What if that's it?
What?
Your silence! She seemed incredibly excited, but I squinted, not following. He might be the only person on the planet who has heard the voice of a siren and lived. What if that's what's killing him? Your silence! But I couldn't keep speaking to him, I protested. That would surely kill him as well.
Even if you're right, Mieka objected, gripping her notebook. It wouldn't explain why Colin's getting sick now. This might mean nothing.
Elizabeth shrugged.
But it's our first real clue.
29. I knew with a cold horror that Akinlee was dying, that his end was near. The same odd connection that told me he was in Port Clyde and not Miami, that brought a strange sense of peace sometimes, made me sure of it. I squeezed my eyes shut, but there was nothing left to cry out. My body shook with dry sobs. If I was going to save Akinlee, I needed to hurry. The string holding our lives aloft, tying our souls to each other, was about to snap. I didn't know if his life ending meant mine would as well, but I was sure that if my impenetrable body could founder this much, death would come eventually. I still don't understand, I rasped. If our voices make people drown themselves, why would my silence be what's killing Akinlee? Mieka rubbed at her eyes, thinking, thinking, thinking.
I don't know. How does any of this work?
Maybe there's a place to start. Ask the ocean about our voice, about the song.
Elizabeth shrugged, looking as frustrated as Mieka.
Come with me, Mieka pleaded with Elizabeth. You were the one who thought that following this trail might find something. Maybe you'll ask a question I'd never think of.
Elizabeth nodded.
Of course. You need anything?
She turned to me.
No, if I do, I have Padma.
Padma leaned into me.
Always.
We'll be fine.
I watched Elizabeth and Mieka walk away, clutching at each other's hands. This was all my fault. All I'd ever meant to do was follow the rules, and this was what I got for breaking them. My sisters were worried sick. I could no longer be with the ocean, and Akinlee was dying. All because of me.
Sorry I dragged you into this, Padma. I swear, life isn't usually this eventful.
I gave a weak chuckle and wiped at where my tears should have been.
I don't mind. It's been nice to feel like there's a purpose to what I'm doing. I know I have a role for the ocean, and I have a role among my sisters. It's satisfying. The real question is, what will I do all day once you're well again?
I appreciate your optimism.
She pressed her lips together.
I'm trying. I was difficult when you found me. I have a lot to let go of.
Plenty is gone, and you helped me find some peace. But there are other things about myself I have to relearn.
Like?
I pulled some of my blanket across her, and she cuddled under it with me.
That I am capable of doing a real job. That I am not a burden. That I deserve a chance at life just as much as anyone else. That it is possible to love me.
I held her hand.
Oh, Padma, it's not just possible. It's inevitable. You're precious to us, and to the ocean, too.
I know. Frightened as she makes me, I feel love underneath her aggression.
Despite the rage I felt at the ocean because of the role I had to play for her, I knew that she would treasure Padma as she treasured us all.
Give her time, and she will be like the mother you should have had.
Our voices are poison,
Mieka said.
Poison?
Yes, our effect on humans is twofold. First, the song lures them to death. And second, our voices are toxic. I think that's what's happened here. The remnants of your voice are deteriorating Akinlee's body. And since sound isn't like a pill or liquid, I don't think the doctors know what to look for.
I nodded.
Okay, poison. What about the song?
Elizabeth wrapped her arms around herself.
It makes sense now that it's all in sounds we slightly recognize but don't fully understand. The song has a little bit of every language in it. The ocean told me what the words mean. It's actually kind of heartbreaking.
Mieka said the lyrics, a slight lilt in her voice echoing the familiar melody, though the syllables didn't quite match up.
Come throw your heart into the waves. Your soul is lost, and still it saves. Drink me in and come undone. Trade 1,000 lives for one. Come away, drink it in. Drink and sink and let it end. Drink and sink and let it end.
You are no more, you are no less. For all must die, all must rest. Bring your body unto me. Let your graveyard be the sea. Come away and drink it in. Drink and sink and let it end. Drink and sink and let it end.
We were silent afterward, taking in the meaning of the sounds we'd always made. I thought several times that it was a lovely mix of languages, and now I felt sure that was so everyone, regardless of their origin, would understand the call to die. I shivered. It's a lullaby for a death march.
But there's a promise in it, and it's all so beautifully seductive. Trade 1,000 lives for one, meaning your death provides for the masses. It's hauntingly poetic.
I could tell Miyuka was battling with herself, repulsed by the song and admiring it at the same time.
So what does this mean? Does it give us any hope for saving Akinlee?
Miyuka bit her lip.
I don't know. It seems like we're missing something. Our voices are toxic, and the song we sing lures people to their death. You didn't sing the song to Akinlee. Maybe that's why he's still alive. But none of what we've found out explains why you're sick, too.
Padma frowned.
What else did the ocean say? When she explained how our voices work, it seemed like she accepted why Akinlee was sick, Elizabeth said. But when we asked her about Colin, she just said that it was impossible.
I blinked.
She said the same thing to me,
I said, remembering. There had been something strange in her voice, though, hadn't there? A heaviness and hesitation, a tone that didn't mean the issue was truly impossible, but that it was something the speaker refused to believe. My whole body felt raw and achy, and when I tried to get up, the room swung nauseatingly around me, and I had to drop back onto my pillows, panting.
Stop, Elizabeth said sharply. What are you trying to do?
I reached out for my sisters.
Take me to the ocean,
I begged them.
Please.
30. It was with extreme care that I was lifted from my bed, carried on a blanket by my sisters down to the ocean. I shivered in the nearly Arctic air, thinking that if things hadn't been so dire recently, I'd have asked to move somewhere warmer, someplace where my fading body might fare better. We were out of time. My sisters had told me that Akinlee was now unable to leave his room, and it felt as if I wasn't too far off from being in the same predicament. My only hope was that, if the ocean genuinely felt how close I was to death, she would tell us the secret that she was hiding, if in fact she did know something she wasn't sharing with us. I knew that I was her only concern at the moment. Akinlee would be the collateral damage of my mistake, but so long as I was brought back, it didn't matter to her what happened to him. And she would know soon, if she hadn't guessed already, that if I was saved, I'd find a way to share it with Akinlee. I was far too tired to hold anything back now.
Ah!
I squealed when my legs were dipped into the water.
It's like knives in my skin.
Wait.
We stood by the surf, still and confused. How were we going to manage this?
Here, try again.
My feet went in, surprised to find the water now lukewarm.
This should be more comfortable.
Should the rest of us get in? Padma asked.
Why don't you two go?
Miyuka suggested.
I'll keep Colin upright.
There were no words at first, only a sense of worry as the ocean channeled Padma's and Elizabeth's thoughts through her own.
I didn't realize you had gotten so much worse. You haven't come to me for a while.
The ocean sounded frightened. I leaned into Miyuka, my chest jolting up in tiny flutters like a bird.
I'm going to die,
I told her. It's worse now.
You won't die, Miyuka promised. There has to be something we just can't see.
I could feel her going through my thoughts, all my memories of Akinlee as they came to the surface. Most of everything before I was changed had fallen into darkness now, and this life was so long, there weren't many seasons of it that felt worth remembering. But Akinlee, everything with him was crystal clear. She felt how endearing I'd found his attempts to speak to me in the library, how my heart had lifted when he danced with me by the tree. She saw his line of texts on my long-lost phone, how my mind had flitted back to him over and over the first time we were separated. She felt how welcomed I'd been when he took me to his house, how warm it had been when he pressed his side against mine in the bookstore. She felt how magical my first kiss was. Heaven help me, even now that kiss felt like a beautiful thing, a wonder that should be placed under a glass box and marveled at by the masses. And because I genuinely could not hold it back, she saw how I missed him. I felt her recoil at the sadness I'd been fighting for my sister's sake, for hers. Until she pulled in a jagged breath, I didn't know Miyako was crying. She shook her head, covering her mouth, the fingers she held against my back digging sharply into me for support. Miyako? I'm sorry. All this time I blamed you for not snapping out of whatever was bringing you down. And now that I feel it, Colin, you did better than I would have. It's so heavy. Padma flung herself onto the rocks, coming out of the water as if she were running from a monster. She fell to her knees 10 feet away from us, sobbing uncontrollably. Elizabeth came out too, though slower, trudging through the last steps to the shore. "We'll go back," she said. "Neither of us could take it, and we just need a break until the thoughts shift. I don't know if your feelings for Akinlee really go that deep or if the ocean amplifies them, but damn."
"No, those are hers."
Elizabeth nodded, looking too dejected to do much more. "Can she just go back to him?" she pleaded. "He's dying. She's dying. They can't have a life together, but at least they could have this."
"No, Colin is mine. We'll fix her."
"With what?" Elizabeth demanded through tears. "There's nothing left." "Please," I said, letting all the dams burst, exposing every last drop of love I had for Akinlee. "You've seen how I feel now. I've shared everything. But I'm sensing that you haven't." I could feel several things as her thoughts processed. Guilt, disbelief, worry, shame. And with that, I knew she'd been keeping secrets.
"Please, what aren't you telling me?"
"It's impossible," she insisted.
And again, I heard the strangeness in her voice.
"I never doubted your ability to love, but what mortal could truly love a girl who he knew for so little time? How could he see past the beauty I have given you to your true self, especially when you could not speak with him?"
"What do you mean?" Miyako said, tensing. "Have you known what's been wrong with Colin this whole time?"
"Please,"
I said again.
"I love you. You've always treasured me. Please tell me what's happening."
Finally, the truth came out.
"It's true. Your voice has poisoned him. That I cannot deny any longer. And the only thing that will heal him is your voice. Your human voice. In order to save him,
I have to be changed."
"Yes. But what's more is that you have, in essence, found a siren in him. The lack of his voice is killing you, too."
I shook my head.
"How is that possible?"
"I cannot explain how two souls join. No man or element or God ever could. But you are tied to each other. Because of that, because of your true, consuming, pure love, you will thrive together, or you will perish together."
"I don't understand."
I swallowed, trying to make sense of it all.
"If he hadn't heard your voice, he'd be fine. But once he aged, however many years from now that might come, you would have found yourself deteriorating then. Or if you had disobeyed me so fully that I had to kill you, he'd have died in the same breath. You are tied through your souls. Now, what happens to one body happens to the other. And since your voice has taken hold of him, killing him slowly, you fall down with him. Slower, of course, as you are still mine. but it will consume you eventually, all the same.
Instantly, my thoughts went to Aisling. I felt an immense guilt for betraying her secret now, but there was no way to hide it anymore. Because if this was happening to me, shouldn't it have happened to her? Shouldn't she have weakened when Tova died? But then, it wasn't simply Tova, was it? She'd followed her grandson and then her great-granddaughter. I smiled a little, seeing the glitch in this mysterious bond between sirens and the ones we loved among the living. Her love wasn't singularly focused, and as a new generation of the family she made exist thrived, she blossomed with it.
You lied to us, Elizabeth roared. You knew!
I didn't believe such a thing could be. How could anyone love you as I have, more than I have? How could two people from such different worlds connect without words? I knew you could have passing affairs and comfortable acquaintances. I thought I gave you so much, there was no room for any other love.
There's always room for love, Padma whispered, even if it's as small as a crack in a door.
Our eyes met, and I remembered saying those very words to her in New York. How could I have known what they would eventually mean for me? I gave her a sad smile. It's true. I found a way. I love him, and it's killing us both. I covered my mouth, but there was still nothing left in me to cry.
This isn't your fault, Colin, Mieka insisted. I nodded my head.
But it is. It would have been one thing for us to fall in love. Maybe we would have felt each other's sadness or happiness from time to time. Maybe my body would have floundered 50 years down the road when his did. That all would have been fine.
I paused, needing to catch my breath.
But I let him hear my voice. I poisoned him, and that's killing us.
I am sorry. If only I had kept you from fleeing from me, perhaps you would have never found him again.
It was always going to happen.
My lungs were working overtime, unable to handle the strain.
Think of everything we've done, all the places we've been, eras we've lived through. How often have you run across someone more than once?
I demanded of my sisters. They were all silent. My breathing slowed, leaving me with an empty feeling.
More and more, I think he and I were destined to be together. And if all we had was that one perfect day, then I'm happy to die with that in my heart.
I shook my head.
It's his life I hate sacrificing. I've dealt out so much death. It's fair for it to come for me. But for him, he's just so...
There wasn't a good enough word for him. Decent implied that he only met the bare minimum of politeness in life. Kind didn't cover the deep-down affection he carried at all times for other people, even when he was sad. Even perfect wasn't fair, because he was certainly flawed, and those shortcomings, that humanness, made me love him all the more.
We know.
Mieka rested her head against mine without actually putting any weight on me. I swallowed.
I don't think I could talk anymore. My voice is tired.
Of course it is, Mieka said lovingly. You've given every last piece of it. I mean, the only way. No. But you just said. I know what I said, but we can still have more time. Her body is stronger than his.
Elizabeth suddenly understood the conversation.
Why are we even debating this? He can save her and she can save him. You need to let her go.
I could be wrong. What if she is changed back and her voice does nothing? What then?
Then she'd still have the last few days or hours of her life with a person she loves.
She won't remember him. For all we know, this could make everything worse.
Elizabeth, broken, all the fire in her body burned out, shouted fiercely at the water.
How could it possibly be worse?
It would be worse for me.
Though no human could have possibly heard, for us, her words echoed in the cavernous sky, shaking the trees and causing rocks to tumble. She had no eyes, could produce no more water than she already had, and still we could all feel her crying.
I am isolated. I cannot have equals. You are all I have, and you avoid me if you can. I understand why. I know you hate what you're forced to do. Have you ever once tried to imagine how it feels to be me?
We understand your burdens. We do, Miyaka assured her. We carry them too.
No, you only feed me. I slave unnoticed, unthanked. It is rare that any of the girls who serve me give me a second thought any time I don't call for you. Is it too much to hold on to one of you who does for as long as I can? When you all leave, I'm less than a memory. I'm not ready to be forgotten.
I swallowed, feeling conflicted and beloved. My soulmate and I were ending the other's life with our absence. And at the same time, the thought of leaving the ocean without my companionship felt cruel. Miyaka's sympathy carried into her, and we all felt it in return.
Think of the pain you just felt as she remembered her only love. Would your hurt be greater than that? Maybe. But consider, Colin did that. She left. She did what we're asking you to do, and she did it for your sake.
The ocean stilled, seemingly unmovable. I refused to let myself feel hope at Miyaka's suggestion. Even if it was true, there was no way to get me back to him. Padma, who'd been detached from everything, wiped at her eyes and quietly approached us. She stuck her hand in the tiny lapping waves, her expression hesitant. Colin told me that you could be the mother I deserved.
And I could.
But you threatened to kill me. That's a notch above what my real mother did. But that doesn't encourage me to love you.
But I love you. You're all precious to me.
Then please, Elizabeth begged, stop pushing us away with your anger.
How else am I to get your obedience? It's already precarious as it is.
Elizabeth hung her head. I have always been a little defiant. I can't not be that girl. But we are not all Ifama or any of the others you've had to do away with. We chose to stay. We're still here.
And had you spoken with us like this years ago, you would have had a handful of daughters eager to be with you.
Miyaka held tight to me as she spoke, and I could feel her hope radiating. I could hardly focus on that, though, for the ocean wept and wept, so lost by her own misunderstanding of us, the very things she'd created. My feet were still in the water, but I lowered my hand as well.
Don't think I won't somehow miss you, I promised. If I'd lived long enough to change back in 70 years, or if I die tomorrow, don't think I wouldn't hold on to you.
I will ache for you. Every day I will.
I know, but when I'm dead, you'll have the others. They understand now.
And soon they will go.
But not until they've taught the new girls to love you as we do.
I'd stay longer,
Miyaka said. I peeked over, smiling up at her. She gave a little shrug, seeming bashful to make the admission.
I would. I'm happy here. I'm happy with you.
I could stay longer, Elizabeth offered. Every family needs a rebel. Let's be honest, you'd be bored without me. There was a tiny glimmer of joy in the midst of her sadness. Padma joined in.
You know what my life was before you. I'm in no rush to run from you.
We could promise to add Colin's time onto our own if you want us to, Miyaka said, glancing at Elizabeth and Padma for their approval. They both nodded.
We'll take on what she owes you, Elizabeth said. We're happy to. I dug my fingers into the gritty rock, feeling like it was the only way I could hold her hand, trying to assure her that she had never truly been alone. There was an air of stillness about her, as if she was taking us in, building herself around a new truth.
I promised you that your voice would never be his undoing, that his death would never come at my hand. This wasn't how I thought it would unfold, but the only way to show you how much I love you would be to keep this promise. It's all I have left.
Her thoughts swirled, aligning into action.
You all will have to do the planning. I assume we'll need to do the change near Maine. I will bring you there when you're ready.
I'll take care of everything, Miyaka vowed. I'll leave as little to chance as possible.
Go now. I need to prepare.
Will you be all right? I asked.
I must be. Go, dear girl. This is all I can give you. Now you can finally know how I love you.
31. The first thing I was aware of was hunger. I felt as if my stomach had caved in on itself, and the lack of food was painful. And even as I considered the ache, it felt foreign, as if pain was something meant for other people, not me. Then I felt myself rocking. I was moving, but it was dark, and I didn't know where I was or how I was being transported. I wasn't using my legs. My legs, all of me, in truth, felt wasted, like I couldn't use them even if I had to.
Hello?
I managed. My throat burned, that painful scratch of swallowing salt water. It took all my energy to lift my head. I could see how I was moving now. Three girls were carrying me, two cradling my body and one supporting my legs.
Where are you taking me?
My voice was weak and shaking. As I asked the question, I realized there were bigger unknowns. I couldn't think what my name was. Ellen? Caitlin? Neither of those sounded right in my head. I didn't know where my family was. I didn't know where they ought to be. I couldn't even think of names or faces, but I sensed I had lost something or someone. My breath began coming fast as fear took over. My instinct was to run, but I could barely keep my head up.
Please don't hurt me.
No response. As we came toward a house, I started wondering if this was my final destination. Lights were shining out through the windows, and while it filled me with a sense of warmth, I didn't trust that feeling. I groaned as they walked me up to the porch, though they moved slowly and smoothly, trying to keep the steps from jostling me. The girl to my right, an Asian beauty with hair as black as the clothes she was wearing, nodded her head three times, and they all lowered me in unison. I was left propping myself up on my elbows, breathless from the move.
Where are we? What do you want?
I whispered hoarsely. The girl at my feet, another beautiful goddess, looked sadly to the others, then at me, as if I were failing a test.
I'm so confused, I whimpered. Please, what's going on?
The final girl, wild-haired and gorgeous, pointed to the house.
Is this my home?
She made a face, unsure how to answer. The Asian girl touched my arm to get my attention. She nodded. As if she was losing something, she touched my cheek. Her hand felt damp. The girl at my feet pushed her hands flat together as if she was praying and bowed once. The final one ruffled my hair and smiled. Wordlessly, they rose and ran around the corner of the house.
Wait!
I called as loud as I could.
Who are you? Who am I?
I started crying, terrified. What was I supposed to do now? My noise must have alerted someone. The door opened wide, the bright light blinding me.
Colin?
A man said.
Julie, Julie, get over here. It's Colin.
Help,
I pleaded.
Please.
Oh, thank goodness, cried a woman, coming to the door. We thought you were dead.
Doesn't look far off,
the man muttered under his breath. Hush, for goodness sakes, Ben, help me get her inside. He lifted me from the ground, taking me inside his house. He gently lowered me onto a plush chair.
Sweetheart, where in the world did you go? Akinley's been worried sick. We all have.
The woman, Julie, pulled a quilt off the back of the couch and draped it over me while she placed her fingers on my wrist and watched the clock.
Who?
I asked in a hoarse whisper, grasping for the blanket. There was a pause, a mix of shock and sadness covering their faces.
I'm sorry. Can I have some water?
Ben rushed back to the kitchen, and Julie crouched down beside me, tucking me in better.
Colin, do you remember me?
I shook my head.
The girls told me this was home, but I don't know you.
What girls?
They didn't say. They ran.
Here you go,
Ben said, coming around the corner with a glass. I pushed myself up and gulped it down, desperate for water.
That helps.
I touched my head, trying to keep my thoughts straight.
She doesn't remember anything.
Ben huffed.
Well, at least you can talk this time,
he said cheerfully. I squinted.
What?
Julie pressed her fingers to her lips.
I don't know how to explain any of this to you. Maybe a Kinley should,
Ben offered.
I doubt he'd have the strength.
Psh,
Ben mocked.
For her, he'd find it.
Julie made a face, allowing the truth of that.
Can you walk?
I don't think so.
It's okay.
Ben came over, gently placing his arms beneath me.
I've gotten pretty good at this.
Julie went ahead of us up the stairs, and it was such a narrow path, I had to lean my head into Ben's shoulder. She led us to the end of the hallway, knocking gently on the door. The light was dim, and I heard something humming in the background.
Hey, how you feeling?
She asked sweetly.
You kidding?
Someone teased lovingly. The voice sounded as worn as I felt.
I could run a marathon.
Something stirred in my chest. It was as if I'd been holding my breath underwater and my lungs just realized I'd broken the surface. She laughed.
You have some company. Up for it?
The person took a breath, and it rattled a little on the way in.
Sure.
Julie nodded to Ben, and he walked me into the room as Julie pulled up a chair for me.
Thank you.
I tried not to moan as I hit the seat. Ben lost his balance and wasn't as gentle as he meant to be. I finally made eye contact with the boy in the bed. He lay on his side, a tube in his nose and another in his vein. His cheeks were sunken, and his skin was ghostly pale. His hair might have been blonde, but it was fading into a gray, making it hard to tell. The only part of this boy that held any life at all were his eyes, which brimmed with tears when he saw me.
Colin?
I sat still. These three people all called me by the same name, which sounded sort of like Caitlin and Ellen and made me believe that maybe they actually knew me.
Where did you go? Where have you been? I thought you were dead.
His chest worked overtime, trying to keep up with his mouth, spilling over with words.
Can you get her a pen, please?
He lifted an arm weakly. It was all bone.
I just need to know.
A pen? I asked. Once again, his eyes lit up.
You can talk?
I stared at this boy, at how he was overjoyed at one of the most basic things a person could do. So it would seem? I smiled. He flopped onto his back, laughing from his gut, and based on Julie's tears, I was guessing she'd been waiting a long time for that to come back.
I've been dreaming of that sound.
He stared at me, seeming so content just to have me in the same room.
I'm so glad you're safe.
I looked at him and the other two people whose names I'd just learned. So this is home then? Akinley looked at me, perplexed, then turned to Ben and Julie.
She said some girls left her here and told her it was home. That's all she knows. She doesn't even know you.
Julie wiped at her tears, trying to calm herself. He moved his eyes back to me as quickly as he could manage.
Colin, you remember me, right?
I stared into this face, searching for something familiar. I didn't recognize the angle of his chin, the length of his fingers. I didn't know the slope of his shoulder or the shape of his lips. Akinley, right? I asked. This poor boy. I pitied him in the depths of my heart. Clearly, he'd already been going through something, and I could see the last scrap of fight he had in him dying with those words.
Yes.
I don't remember ever seeing you before in my life. I'm sorry, He pressed his lips together as if he was swallowing the urge to cry.
But,
I said,
I know your voice. I know it as if it were my own.
McKinley, this strange boy whose life at the moment seemed to be hanging on this, pushed himself from the bed. Julie gasped, watching as his arms trembled under his weight, even as thin as he was. He crushed his eyes together in concentration, willing himself up. I heard Ben whisper to himself,
"Come on, come on, come on."
When McKinley, breathing as if he truly had just run a marathon, was fairly close to upright, he held out an arm for me. I fell into it fearlessly. We leaned into each other, neither of us strong enough to stay up on our own.
I thought I'd never see you sit up again,
Julie cried. We both turned to her, smiling at the happy tears on her face.
I'm feeling okay, all things considered,
McKinley said.
All right, let's not push it.
Ben came over and helped him lie back down. I felt a little better. There was still a buzz of confusion in my head, but I was welcomed here, and McKinley's voice was nourishing me better than food would. I sniffed as a few tears escaped, lifting my hands to wipe them away. It was then that I caught the only clues I'd been given by whoever had left me here. On one wrist, someone had written, "You are Colin." The other said, "He is McKinley." I flipped my hands over and searched up and down my arms, hoping there was more. "Look," I begged, holding out my arms.
"Pretty handwriting,"
Ben commented. Julie hit him, but in a way that seemed playful.
"Seriously?
That's all you have?"
McKinley asked. "Apparently. So all I know is who I am and who you are." I looked into his eyes, the glowing blue, and sensed that was all that mattered. Epilogue. The doctors called it a miracle. Day by day, the illness that had crippled McKinley was fleeing his body. It had been replaced by an enthusiasm for life and a desire to make up for lost time. Though no one had diagnosed me, I knew I was healing from something myself. My road to wellness was shorter than his, but it was no less astonishing. McKinley became the only history I had. He told me how we once danced by a tree while others watched with envy. He wowed me with a story about a beautiful dress I had that turned to dust in the guest room, leaving a white stain on the hardwood floor. And he told me about our first kiss, how it was beautiful and disastrous at once, and how every kiss since then held the same strange magic. I listened to it all, etching the words on my heart. For as much as I studied these stories, I never understood how our paths crossed the way they did. I could only conclude it was fated. When we'd all settled down from that first night, Julie found a bag on the porch, which we thought must have been left by the same three girls who had brought me to them. Just like the clues on my skin, I'd only been left with two worldly possessions. The first was a wad of cash that I immediately handed to Ben and Julie as compensation for giving me a home. Most of it went to pay for McKinley's medical bills, which was fine with me. I didn't know if there was a word bigger than soulmates, something that meant the feeling of being so connected that it was hard to tell where one person ended and the other began. If there was, that word belonged to McKinley and me. The second thing was a bottle of water. It was so peculiar, this water, a blue that was both dark and brilliant, too thick to see through, but still carrying light. No matter the season, it was always cold, and there were tiny shells in it that never settled. Sometimes I slept with it, even though it was cold enough to wake me up if I rolled on it the wrong way. It was the only clue I had to tell me who I had been before the night I was left on the porch, and I loved it second only to McKinley. Somehow, I knew that this love was important, as if treasuring the water meant I treasured myself. And I did. I loved my recovering body. I loved my blue-eyed soulmate. I loved my adopted family. I held the water to my chest, and I loved.
This is Arielle Delisle. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Siren by Kira Cass. This program was produced by Elgin Productions. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2016 by Kira Cass. Production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.